Welcome to Fires on the Farm, episode 237. I am Donovan, and with me is Roy.
Donovan, we have games that count. It's been so long since we've talked. We got a lot to catch up on.
Do we have? And it's been weird because there hasn't been it's been a few days. And then we're like, we had to get through the week, had to get through the Korean series. And then we were going to talk before the last breakout, but that rained out. And ironically, it rained here today. And then we had the breakout today that we could talk about. And it's good to see you. It's good to talk baseball. It's good to be at 500 for the Padres. Can I say that? I can say that, right? We're at 500.
Yeah, right now the Padres are tied for the best and the worst record in Major League Baseball.
I just can't wait for in 2 weeks or if sometime we don't stay 500, are we, we don't start hot and the team really need to start hot, where it'll be like the Padres are 500 for the first time since the second day in the fucking season.
I could just
see, AJ Casavell or someone tweeting that out.
Oh yeah, they're going to. But I'm not gonna say it's still early. That at all this year. We learned our lesson last year.
Did you get up and watch any? Obviously, we have day jobs, so I get up at my regular time, but I check the score as soon as I got up at 4:40 in the morning.
Well, fortunate for me, I was on a work assignment on the East Coast. I was in Philadelphia, so I set my clock a little bit early. So that just meant I had to get up at 5:45, get in the shower real quick, and I was able to watch the start of that first game. So that was cool. And then the next day, I was in Chicago, so still I was able to watch a good chunk of that game before I had to head out of the hotel and go do what I was on assignment to go do.
It was so bizarre because I got up at 4:40, first day, checked the score. Okay, we're winning. Wow, we're winning? Really? And then saw that quickly go to hell, which was fine, but it was weird because normally when I leave the house, it's a little bit 5:00 in the morning. No radio, no nothing on. It's kind of where I can reset my meditation time, I guess you want to call it. But those 2 days I had the game on, I'm like, holy God, look at my commute. I'm like, you're listening to Padre baseball. It's 5 a.m. and there's no one on the freeway.
A little different. So we got some stuff to talk about, but both of those games, the starting pitching, it's like everybody still seems to be in spring training mode.
Yeah.
So both the starting pitching on both sides was pretty kind of subpar, I guess. I don't want to rip on anybody, but it's, and then a couple of relievers looked pretty good, but lots of offense. And so that's what kind of made it all fun.
Yeah. The second game, I'm like, I didn't know if I was upset that Musgrove gave up 4 runs or that surprised that we scored 9 runs in 3 innings.
Cause Yamamoto was rough and, starting pitching on both sides.
Yeah. And I went to bed going it's going to be, that guy's supposed to be really good. It should be a bloodbath. We should be bad. And I wake up, it's 9-5, holy cow. And Manny couldn't have come through at a better time. I mean, really, for Ha-Sung Kim, the whole series just couldn't be more textbook and storybook style. But Manny couldn't have thought of a better time to hit a home run.
Oh, my gosh, off the scoreboard. That was a big blast. So Ha-Sung Kim, unfortunately, he went hitless for the series.
Yeah.
But in that second exhibition game, he hit the 2 home runs. Somebody was talking about just the pressure that he must have been under having to host his entire team, all the media attention I'm sure he was getting. And it seems like he's not that person that wants to be in the middle of the spotlight.
Right.
So I'm sure he'll be happy to be back home in San Diego where he's a star player, not the star player. Put on a pedestal, everything.
A little bit of an introvert there where you're like, okay, hey, show us where you live. Show us where you grew up. I lived way over there, man. I grew up somewhere else.
I live over here at shortstop and in that batter's box. That's where I live.
Right. And then today, we had, we moved, we're back in the house. Thank God we're out of our little Airbnb. And they had Peter Seidler's celebration of life, which I mostly caught on Twitter.
Yeah, I was out on the golf course. I wasn't able to catch it, but I'm sure there wasn't a dry eye in the house. I'll have to catch up on some of the highlights later once I see some video. I haven't seen any video posted yet.
I've seen a lot of video, and the greatest video was a game, and it was AJ Preller telling a story about him and Peter were talking how can we get this team, what do we need to do? And he said that Peter pulled out a bag that looked like a controlled substance. And he says, do you want to light this? And then he changes the story to like, well, then they went outside and neither one knew how to light the sage.
Okay.
They burnt sage, but AJ made it sound like it might have been a hooter. It might have been a little 420. I don't know, but you know, they went out. So it was right when the Cubs were coming into Petco Park and they were out. It was AJ, Peter, and I can't remember who else was with them, but they were lighting sage and walking through the outfield and saying positive things about our pitchers, positive things about our hitters. And he said later on that when like he talked to someone from the Cubs organization, he's like, were you out there like lighting, burning sage for like offense? And AJ goes, fucking A, we were. They're damn right we were. Sorry about the cursing, but yeah, something to the effect like, hell yeah, we were.
I love it.
Manny's was sweet. You know, everything I've seen was like you said, not a dry eye in the house, a lot of laughter, a lot of fun. We had to move, like we weren't going to make it. And you know, it's just, it's the culmination of a wonderful life being celebrated in Peter Seidler. And he has changed my life as a Padre fan, you know, and he's changed my community as a San Diegan, for us both really. And it's funny because I'll finish with this. Like, I was talking to Liddy about this and she was catching up on some of the video that I've already seen. And Manny was talking about, you know, the owner is like, kids, like you have a brother forever. Like you need anything, I'm just a phone call away. I don't think, you know, it seemed like Manny was much more closer to Peter than he was, say, the Baltimore ownership, you know, the Orioles ownership. And this is their knock on them. But I don't think he got that kind of, I'm not sure if the ownership of the Orioles were that comforting or even that friendly or even that close to the team. But, you know, Peter was close to the team and Ron Fowler, those guys were close to the team. And those are genuine people. Peter is a genuine person. So that love, that sense of connection, I think, and family that as a player, employee / person, Manny really gravitated towards that. And you felt it when he talked about it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the Orioles. They actually just lost their longtime owner, Peter Angelos. He passed away today. He's well into his 90s. And my understanding is that the ownership had gone into some sort of a conservatorship isn't the right word, but
right.
Yeah. So his kids were running the organization for the last several years. And they just completed the sale of the team this off season or in the middle of last season. But yeah, the Orioles family is feeling some emotions today about the loss of Peter Angelos. And I'm so now I'm looking forward to Thursday. We're going to be there opening day and before the game starts, I'm sure there's going to be a video montage and a long tribute to Peter Seidler. So I'm sure that's going to be, you know, his spirit is going to be in the building both that day and throughout the whole season as they wear the PS patch on their sleeve.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to that. And I know it's going to be a heavy moment.
Yeah. And have you seen, so they have the new thing when they hit a home run or they get on base, it's the finger hearts.
Is that what that is? Because that looks like pay me, show me the money. That's what that says to me.
It does, but so RotoWare took that and have a thumb up like this, and then he calls it the finger hearts, and all donations of that shirt sale is going to go to the Lucky Duck Foundation.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, I saw that today.
That's the first I've heard yesterday. Of that. That's great.
Yeah. So that's, you know, and that's one of the great things I love about RotoWare, and you know, and Rob Friedman from Pitching Ninja. Sorry. Is, you know, they're very fortunate to have the platforms they have, and sure they have businesses and they're running a business, but you know, to take sales of shirts like that and use it towards good is another example of how, well, not just how Peter changed baseball, but how people, you know, see the world, I guess you want to say there with the money that's going on. I kind of lost my train of thought there for a second. But yeah, it's going to go out to the Lucky Duck Foundation. And I think I'm going to buy one.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. So the next little thing. So on our agenda today, we're going to talk about Jackson Merrill, Graham Pauly, and Tyler Wade making the opening day roster. Yeah. Some unrest in the MLB Players Association, a little scandal, but this has been not like scandal that we got a couple hours up north. This is more, you know, labor yeah. dispute scandal kind yeah. of stuff. And then MLB Pipeline, Jonathan Mayo had a nice article about the Padres international scouting dominance. And we've got some Mad Friars notes on the backfields. But first, let's talk about the spring breakout game that just happened.
Oh, well, where were you, dude? You were on the links. And where did you play today? Did you play anywhere good or?
Well, I played up in Escondido at a course I used to like a whole lot called Eagle Crest. Okay. But unfortunately, it has fallen under a bit of disrepair. It'd be nice to see somebody new come in and put some attention into the course maintenance. Because it's a fun layout and it needs a lot of TLC. Yeah. But I had a good time out there anyway.
Yeah. Well, did you shoot anything good or do I don't.
It was a scramble. It was a group event and my team shot 6 under par. We came in second place. So I got a little bit of money in my pocket.
Yeah. Those are finger hearts, dude. It's not.
Yes. Okay. Finger hearts. Yes. But
it almost looked like I thought when Merrill got on, it seemed like it was like keys. He's like, is he going to be like Crone with the dance thing? He's not going to know how to do it. You know, when they were doing the,
I'm all for that. You know, there's always got to be the awkward white guy in the party.
Anyways, I watched the whole the spring breakout game. The Pods prospects narrowly beat the Mariners and they jumped out to an early lead. Robbie Snelling got the start there, and Robbie Snelling that we've been saying, and you guys have known for a long time, is just Robbie Snelling. So what'd he do? He struck out a bunch of guys. He gave up one run and a couple of hits and just looked like mid-season form Robbie.
Yeah, 3 innings pitched, 1 earned run on 4 hits, 4 strikeouts, no walks.
Real clean outing for him. And then Tirso, something that we'll be talking about a little bit more and having a minor discussion about, the changes in Tirso Ornelas, hits a tank, hits the first pitch breaking ball, die high and just hits two run shot, I think. What about a 3 run shot?
Well, it was the first of two because he hit another tank later in the game.
And then later on, he gets a mixing ball slider around letter high and just crushes it. And granted, maybe that first home run was air blown. The wind was blowing out. That second one was hitting deep into right center field gap, and it was a legit homer.
Now the first swing that he took, I don't like drawing comps, but yeah. The mechanics of that swing reminded me of Juan Soto from the last couple of years. The way that his head moved as he got down low and drove through that ball, it reminded me a lot of Juan Soto. So a lefty with pretty good strike zone discipline, who's got plenty of power, puts the ball on the ground a lot. Maybe there's something there.
Well, we'll talk a little bit later about what could be. Moving with Tirso when we get to the Mad Friars backfields notes. But then Tank Commander comes up later on in the game and just murders the baseball. A kid's swing, with the lefties, most lefties had that sweet, just effortless swing. When Nathan Mortarella swings, he's swinging it, as Mike Schilt would say, with intent. And it's intent to murder. And he crushed this pitch. And I think he might have killed someone out on the berm there because it was just a laser shot to the outfield.
So bat-wise, you know who he kind of reminds me of is Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, a little Schwarber.
I would love to see a little bit of that come out of him.
Yeah, and he came into camp, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, came into camp a little bit thinner, a little more focused in conditioning. So, we're looking for great things for him, and certainly there's a path for him to the major league squad. But overall, Marcus Castagnon had a couple of solid plays at third, some long throws across the diamond. And talk about Martorella's bat. I love his stretch. He's not full on legs, splits, but he's got a really good stretch for such a kind of a meaty guy.
And right. He's more athletic than his frame would suggest.
Yeah, absolutely. And Castagnon has a little bit sharper arm than I think people give him credit for. He had a couple RBI knocks. And later on in the game, DeVries got an opposite field single in the eighth, ninth inning.
Real pretty swing with him. Man, the bat comes through so level. That was a really nice, just aesthetically, it was a very nice looking hit.
Yeah, who else had a good game? Austin Krobe had a pretty good game on the mound.
He came in, pitched three innings of relief, gave up two runs. But yeah. I mean, the Mariners have a pretty strong farm system. Yeah. So he was still facing some really good pitch, some good hitters. So Dylan Lesko came in, didn't have a great outing, but you know, he's still
coming back from Tommy John, and we're fine with that. It's, you know, let's wait till the gates get open to see how the rest of the season comes with him. But that's right. Fine.
But then after him, Javian Sandridge pitched a third of an inning. Cole Puplum got two thirds of an inning. And then Bradley Rodriguez with a full inning. I haven't seen Bradley Rodriguez before, but he came out there lighting up the radar gun, touching 100 miles an hour. And apparently he was looking pretty sharp.
Yeah, he looked really good. And once again, I want to say I might have saw him in Elsinore with one of those guys that did play in Elsinore that you're like, oh, who's Rodriguez? But I'm not sure. Fantastic game though. And let's see, Ethan Salas didn't get a hit, but had a couple walks. I think he stole a bag. I think Marcy stole a bag. Marcy had another good game.
Bradley Rodriguez has not pitched domestically yet. He's only been in the Dominican Summer League.
Well, then we'll definitely see him this year in Elsinore.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But overall, a fun game. I'm bummed that last game didn't get played. We would have had, this wasn't a makeup game. This was actually scheduled. We were going to play two games. So that's fine. You know, whatever. And, you know, having Jackson Merrill and Graham Pauley not making it kind of a nice thing to not making the squad. It was good.
They didn't make the squad for the right reasons.
Absolutely. But I was hoping maybe later in the second half of the game, they'd let guys get in. Like I saw, Kai Murphy got in. I think he got a couple at bats.
Yeah, Rosman Verdugo came in as DH late in the game. Brandon Valenzuela replaced Ethan Salas, and Nick McLaurie relieved Nerulian Cedeno at second base. But it wasn't the full scale shift change that I thought we'd see, like with the big league teams.
All right, absolutely. But that was real fun, and they're a week away. I think next weekend is when the minor league season starts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were talking about we need to catch up with John Conniff. And I think by the time we connect with him, we're going to know what the minor league rosters are.
Yeah. We're going to try to catch up with him next week. I go out of town on Monday. And when I come back next week, I think Matt Friars will be coming out with their affiliate rundown or their affiliate kind of set. And we'll have John Conniff come on, and he's actually in Arizona right now. We'll get his thoughts on how minor league camp went, but let's move on. Hey folks, it's time to go on Apple Podcast. Give us a review. Give us a rating. You can follow us on Spotify. You can follow us on iHeartRadio, X, Threads, Instagram. Go to the YouTube page, hit subscribe. All the interviews we do, all of the episodes we do, we're going to put on YouTube as well. Maybe we're trying to mix something up to maybe bring a little more traffic to the YouTube channel. Maybe we'll mix something up in the upcoming season and have a giveaway or something like that, or something I can do to get you guys to go to the channel. Definitely going to have interviews that I drew up in Elsinore. Go do that and help us out. We really appreciate it. It goes a long way for us.
And if you have any suggestions, hit us up on X or any way you can get a hold of us on Twitter. We're all ears. We want to do whatever you guys want to hear. It's a lot of fun. We like having fun with y'all. All right. So since we spoke last time, the Padres made a big trade. They went out and got Dylan Cease from the Chicago White Sox. It was a pretty good haul they had to give up. So right-handed pitcher Drew Thorpe, Jairo Uriarte, and Steven Wilson, as well as outfielder Sammy Zavala. And as that day was unfolding, we kept hearing more and more names thrown out. And it was like, okay, how many guys are going to be in this deal? Because I think Zavala was the last name that I heard added to the list. And each one stung a little bit more. But overall, I'm really excited to have Dylan Cease here, not just for this year, but for next year as well.
Absolutely. You know, whenever they mention it, because Cole went down for the Yankees, so everyone starts going, oh, they need to trade for Dylan Cease. And then all of the Padres social media are like, oh, we would do this with Dylan Cease. And I almost tweeted like, you guys are crazy thinking that AJ Preller is going to trade for Dylan Cease. I was this close to it. I wrote it out. I'm like, dude, don't do it. You never know. And sure enough, the day as like, all right, dude, guess what? You're traded. Go find your passport.
Yeah,
that was just insane. I I'm okay with this trade. I really am. I was excited to see Jairo Iriarte. I know it he's a prospect now, but the stuff is there. The stuff is a little bit better, and we've heard this from other evaluators, a little bit better than Robbie Snelling. He doesn't have the much fanfare that has come with Snelling, but he was going to be very exciting for the Padres. Drew Thorpe, I wasn't too high on, even though he was the minor league pitcher of the year. The command and off-speed stuff work great in the minor leagues. I think sometimes that does not translate well to the major leagues, and we wish him all the well. Even if he wasn't going to get a shot for the rotation here in San Diego, which I don't know if you saw that little backhanded kind of like.
Saw that. I mean, I don't think that he meant that as a jab to the Padres. Right. It was just the situation that he walked into that.
Yeah.
Here he was behind, he was behind Avila and Brito
King and Brito, and he was behind a bunch of guys that were supposed, you know, even Robbie Snelling. He might have been even behind Robbie Snelling to make that number five spot or even the roster.
Right. So it was pretty apparent that he wasn't going to make the big league team. He was going to go probably to AA, where over in Chicago now he's got a chance to break their opening day roster. So yeah. That's what all these guys, they care less about winning a World Series. It's about making it up to the majors, getting that big league check. Now, maybe after you've been a veteran for 10, 12 years, you've got your bag, then that's when you want that trophy, you want that ring. But it's not most of these guys, they're looking for the opportunity to get them up to the majors the quickest.
Yeah.
The one that stings the most, so I was really looking forward to what Sammy Zavala was going to do this year. What he does in AA is going to really determine his path, you know, how far he's going to make it, how well he hits advanced pitching. But Steven Wilson, friend of the podcast, and his story is so great, being a six-year senior, getting a sixth year of eligibility to pitch at Santa Clara State, and then making his way through the minors with the Padres, coming up and becoming, you know, not just an accessory piece in the bullpen. He was one of the lockdown setup guys the last couple of years. Yeah, he became somebody that you're squinting at, like, maybe he can have a major league career. Now, he looks like he's going to stick in the majors for a long time. Yeah. But beyond that, he's a good person. He's just, he always seems like such a steady, calming influence, really good with the fans. You know, so I was sad to see him go. I'm sure he's going to go on to do great things. So that was the one that stung for me personally.
Yeah, and all those guys going to the American League, I'm just fine with. I know there's kind of no difference between the league now that every team plays each other, but I'm glad not having to see that guy in the sixth or seventh inning, you know, in a tight game. And it's funny how you should talk about, you know, the kind of where guys are when they want to get to the major leagues. Today at the Celebration of Life, Joe Musgrove talked about that. He's like, as players, you know, we come up and we just want to know that we fit in with the big dogs, that we can compete with these guys. And then once we feel like we can compete and kind of like we've got a foothold in the league, that we want to start winning championships. And he mentioned the exact thing you just mentioned just now. And it resonated with me. Like all these guys that are trying to make the major leagues, they always say, yeah, I just want to do whatever I can for the team and help them win a championship. Sure, that's hyperbole. But they just want to get on the squad and know that they can belong and stay. So I found that very interesting. You know, we love Steve Wilson and Sammy Zavala. That leg kick has got to come down. For me, that leg kick has got to come down. I love the support that his dad gives him on social media. I hope the White Sox fans embrace him because he's fiery. He's competitive. But I'm not sure, like you said, it's going to matter where he hits in AA, what he hits in AA, we're really going to give us a true kind of idea of what kind of career he could have.
Right. So adding somebody like Dylan Cease, he's been one of the most durable starters in baseball the last few years. So I think that affords the Padres to be able to trade away Drew Thorpe and Jairo Iriarte for him, because those are two guys we were looking at, like second half, those are two guys that are going to come up and contribute to this team in this year. But now that you've got that third, fourth, I guess you'd probably slot third in this rotation.
Yeah.
That gives you so much more depth and length in your roster.
Yeah.
So where we were looking at those two guys to contribute, I think now the chance that they would come up this year is a lot slimmer than it was a month ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And with another, 130 innings taking off the board, with Dylan Cease making so many starts.
No, it's going to be more like 180 to 180.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right.
Michael King is going to be in the 130 to 150 range probably.
And that really takes the pressure off him, hopefully. And I thought he pitched really well in the Korean series. You know, and they did treat that the pitching kind of like a spring training game. He pitched three solid innings. You only pitched two and a third, I think, maybe three and a third. So he doesn't have to feel like he has to be that top number three guy. Like, he can just go out there, kind of relax, let his personality and game go through and see where the chips fall. And we do have that depth in the pitching, in the rotation, down in the minors that will come up and contribute, because it takes more than five guys. It's going to take more than six guys. It's probably going to take 8 to 10 guys. Most of the time it's 12 for a major league season. That's with injuries and just guys going on the IL and just how the whole season is such a grind that they're going to contribute.
Right. Now, I think so this year we saw Jeremiah Estrada kind of come out of nowhere and show up as the filthy right-handed guy in spring training. I think the Padres believe in him a lot, and I think that allowed them to let Steven Wilson go. I'm guessing that Chicago was looking at the deal and they said, we need to have a major leaguer. Yeah. Now, earlier in the offseason, when the Padres went out and they signed Yuki Matsui, and then they went out and they picked up Wandy Peralta, a couple of lefties, that had me shaking in my boots a little bit, that Tom Cosgrove might be somebody that was available in trade talks. And he's the one person that, if he was included in a trade, that would hurt me a little bit more than Steven Wilson.
Absolutely.
So I'm sad to see Steve go. I'm glad that Tom's still with us. But I do think that Jeremiah Estrada and then Steven Kolek also looked pretty good this spring. He's a Rule 5 guy, that he's going to stick around. So I think that kind of gave them a little bit of that, you know, the depth to let Steven go.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So speaking about making rosters, let's move on to the Korea series. And Jackson Merrill, welcome to the major leagues.
Merrill Madness.
So we're repping our Merrill Madness shirts here. So the expectations are high for him. Sammy Lev, I thought he put this well. He posted this on Twitter. Jackson Merrill starts in center field today for the Padres, making his MLB debut at just 20 years old. Merrill joins only Ken Griffey Jr. and Andrew Jones as players in the last 50 years to start opening day in center field before turning 21.
That it's huge. And you don't, it's funny, because kind of like being kind of so close to the kid, and you hear those names, you're like, I don't know. I mean, like, it just, because they were so touted. Like, Andrew Jones was like 19 when he came up and just blew up. Junior was junior. I mean, he's the kid. And then have him get those couple of hits in the Korea series just to kind of get him off his back. We expect special things. But once again, and we said this last time when we talked about them making the roster, there may be, and there's going to be, some times where he's going to go over. There's going to be times where, you know, like, maybe he shouldn't be up. You got to allow him that time to make those adjustments. And maybe they don't come. Maybe he just keeps hitting, you know, and throws a little bit of power there, plays some solid center field so far. But you're going to have to allow him to grow. And he's going to have to grow in the major league level, because I don't think anyone else is coming. I don't think they want to throw Tommy Pham into that clubhouse. No matter how glaring, left field looks with Jurickson Profar and, you know, with Sugar being in the outfield, like, sure, this roster is the roster it is now, but there's someone that could be coming down the pike come the trade deadline if we're in contention. But I don't see bringing him in and letting the kids play.
Right. They didn't bring Merrill up to bump him back to the bench anytime soon. Jose Azcárcar is there as the backup center fielder. But he's going to have some growing pains. He's getting a crash course in center field. So there's going to be some times that a ball might fall between center and one of the corner outfielders because he didn't take charge or because he thought the other guy had it.
Yeah.
There might be some plays you see right in the, you know, toward one of the corners where he's not quite sure where the wall is, that kind of thing. I mean, I know it's center field, so the wall's even, but still, it's hard to run back and feel that wall approaching on you. So he looks really good so far. There's going to be a couple of plays where you look at it and you kind of cringe and you go, well, you know, Grisham probably would have gotten that and made it look easy, but you got to let the kid have a little bit of time to grow. But so far, he looked really good. Two for eight with a double And that double that nearly cleared the right field wall, again, Sam, by the way, Sam Levitt has been killing it this spring.
In-season Sammy is what it is now.
It has been. So he tweeted out, Jackson Merrill's double would have been a homer in 23 of 30 major league ballparks. And that thing was like a foot and a half short of the top of that fence. Yeah. Oh, man, what a moment that would have been for him.
Well, you know, and that was a very – it's the ball doesn't travel there. And he hit that ball on the front of his – on the front foot. So he kept his hands back and all the weight shifted towards the ball. So he got a good swing on it, but that wasn't full leaning into a pitch, getting all of it. That was just kind of like a
– that was a
like
changeup that he was off balance on.
Yeah. And it almost went out.
You got to kind of slow down your bat as you're coming through the zone to make sure you get the barrel on it. And he still almost flicked it out.
Yeah. And he has looked good in the outfield. He has looked, you know, there was little, one play, I think, was maybe the first game that kind of fell in between, or even during the exhibition game where it kind of fell between him and Kim. A little bit in the no man's land, a little bit of maybe communication problem there. But those are things you'll learn. Yeah, you'll figure that stuff out. And speaking of Merrill Madness, his parents have they have the Merrill Madness hashtag and they have the Merrill Madness merch. And the mission for this is to help families who are always on the field pursue their child's dream. A portion of every purchase of the Merrill Madness website go towards getting children on the field, whether it's helping with equipment or supporting travel ball expenses. MerrillMadness.com. You guys go to MerrillMadness.com, pick up a shirt. There's going to be more merch available. It's like what we do with when we sell shirts. The money goes to a better cause. We're not pocketing it. I don't think they're pocketing much of it. I know it's going to a good cause. And both his parents are school teachers. They're not sitting there trying to count their money. They couldn't even make the Korea series because it was just way too expensive. And they couldn't get the passports in time. But, you know, go out there. Merrill Madness, be the third ones to get it because we've got them first. And then I told her to send him to Bennett Woods because they had Jackson on during spring training. They got a couple of shirts. And all their friends and family have them back there in Maryland. You guys check these out. Wear them to Petco Park. Rep them on social media with Merrill Madness. Let them know that you got the shirts. And it's a really good cause. We really appreciate it.
They're really nice shirts too. They're the wicking material. Yeah, they're like a dry fit kind of a thing. So these would be good workout shirts if you need need it to be a good undershirt if you need something to wear under your jersey to the game.
Yeah, and you look like you're in the know. Like Merrill Madness kids, all the Padre fans know who Merrill is. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Oh yeah. All right, so also making the opening day roster, Graham Pauly made the opening day roster. He only had one plate appearance in the Korean series. It was a strikeout. But I think we're going to start seeing a little bit more of him as time goes by. Tyler Wade also made the opening day roster. He started both games at third base for the Padres, went 3-for-5. But Tyler Wade, I think they kept him on the roster because he can play everywhere, and he plays pretty darn good defense anywhere you put him.
Yeah, what I feel is going to happen once we get through these two exhibition games is they're going to set the 26-man roster, and I think they're going to send probably their Double A, if not El Paso, and keep Tyler Wade for the duration because he did look really good. He does have I don't think he has major league experience, but he has been around
Wade has a bunch of major league experience. Okay, yeah. So he's been around a while.
I really hate to say it. You don't want Pauly to be a platoon guy and be there for matchups. You want him getting at bats every day. So I think when they do set the major league roster on, I think Wednesday, that they'll probably send him down and keep Tyler Wade until Manny's full health.
Yeah. Wade has 359 games of major league experience across 8 years.
Yeah.
Most of it with the Yankees. I like going on Baseball Reference and I look over to the left to the right where the position is, and they list the numbers and there's a slash. And so like in 2019, his position 47/H568D9. So he's played pretty much everywhere except everywhere except catcher and pitcher and maybe first base, but everywhere else he's got experience. So I think that experience goes a long way now, and he's a lefty hitter. Yeah. So that's where he and
Pauly kind of match Pauly, up a little bit.
Yeah, they're a little bit redundant, I guess. Maybe that was kind of what they were trying to see is like, okay, what does Wade do against actual like Dodgers pitching when the games count? And he held his own. He doesn't have the kind of power that Pauly has. I don't think he has the same kind of hit tool at any point that Pauly has now. But just the ability to be able to go slot him in anywhere on the field and be a not just a competent defender, right, but a very good defender. And that there's something to say for that kind of versatility.
Versatility. Absolutely. And with Pauly, like, he's going to be a major league. He's going to be a major league. He's going to be a Padre. I really think they brought him up to show the appreciation for his last year's season and the spring that he had. And for him to get comfortable, to be with the major league team, kind of get his feet wet a little bit, like, so it's not such a, like, holy cow, this is, you know, it's another way that I think teams let minor leaguers kind of get comfortable. You know, it's like a September call-up at the beginning of the season. Like, here's your chance to just kind of get used to being in the major leagues for a minute. Might not play that much, but this is how it works, and this is what you need to do. And he sees what he needs to do. Go to the minors down there and knock it out and come on up later on.
Well, it's a kind of unusual major league experience being on the other side of the Pacific Ocean, playing in a foreign country where everybody speaks a foreign language and right, going around traveling, trying all the food that everybody was. Now, I had so much fun living vicariously through Bob Scanlon and some of these other guys that were just sharing all the things that they were seeing and doing out there in Korea. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Scanlon was talking. He was the foodie of the whole group. You know, I thought Don Arcelo would be. He was like, I'm in the shrimp line and it's 50 deep and they got four people to take care of 50 people. But it was great seeing all the food, you know, and de-ling, de-ling, de-ling with the bonus mileage with the flying miles. You're getting a nice bonus, a chunk of flying miles at the beginning of the season to supercharge your miles savings or whatever.
Yeah, again, my heart goes out to Stephen Wilson, though, that he was sitting there at those tables with his significant other getting ready to get on the bus, to get on the plane, to go fly to South Korea. And that's not even a once in a lifetime opportunity. That's just blind luck on being on the right team at the right time to be able to go do that. And all of that was just kind of pulled out from under the carpet for him.
You felt it was kind of a weird day too, because when that trade happened, Sammy was there. The team would kind of already were there. They were kind of mulling around the clubhouse. And as the trade went on, like you said, like, okay, we know it's Jairo Iriarte and Drew Thorpe. Okay. Oh, like another half an hour later. Oh, they're adding Samuel Zavala to this. Oh, they're adding Stephen Wilson. And all this time he's talking to Ben and Woods going like, yeah, I see this guy. I see that guy. And they're all waiting around. They kind of don't know what's going. Schilt came off the field and they're like, after the trade. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea. Like, it really caught him off guard with just like, yeah, I have no idea what happened. And they're like, hey,
I think he knew what was happening. I think he just wasn't at liberty to say anything about it yet. Because, you know, team personnel, they're not going to talk about specifics until the deal is done.
Right. Poker face. Talk about chill with the poker face. And there's a real quick on the Korean series that I noticed. And Lydia kind of pointed this out. As that second game went, like, a good manager doesn't show emotion. Like, I like my manager when he's winning or losing to be just like, stone face. Okay. I'm still like, this is great. We're winning the game. But like, as you watch their bullpen just melt down for the Dodgers, you just see varying degrees of Bip Roberts just kind of like losing it. Like, just going, oh, you just, his face just melts to this like anguish. When we were getting smoked, you know, when they were coming back the other day, they're showing Schilt. It was just like, you know, you need to have that level headedness, and you can't wear it for me. And I wear my heart on my sleeve. So it's something that I have that I don't like to see in my leaders. But certainly it was fun watching him kind of just like, look at his hit batter. Okay. And then right on his little card, you know, he was just like, what's going on? Their bullpen does not look sharp.
You know, did you see the clip when Manny hit that big home run? There was the shot in the dugout. Did you see that?
Yeah.
That was one of those where you need to watch it like 10, 12 times and each time focus on a different person in that shot. But Mike Schilt was right there and you see the elation on his face. So he's going to celebrate in the middle with all the guys. But the one that stood out to me was Jackson Merrill.
Yeah.
That he stood up and he was happier than everybody. And yeah. It reminds me of what I saw in Lake Elsinore, that he was always more excited about everybody else's achievements than whatever he did. Whatever he did, it's like, he expects this to happen. He expects to get the hit, make the nice play. Like, this is what I do. But when somebody else did something cool, he was the first one to jump out of the dugout and give him a pat on the back.
Yeah, I noticed that also in the high A in Fort Wayne, where at the end of the inning, either they're coming out or coming in, he was always there to go like high five guys coming off the field. They would always have that last like 30 seconds of guys coming off the field, and you always saw him high fiving guys, and then getting in the dugout. That's what you need in a young professional leader. That excitement for other players, not just yourself.
Yeah, he's just wired to be a leader.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're here to talk about minor league stuff. We've been spending this whole time talking about major league things.
A bunch of our minor league guys made the squad. So let's go.
That's right. We're like proud papas here. We're like proud Padres. So with Mad Friars, John Conniff is in Peoria right now. And pretty much every day he's pumping out notes from the backfield. So every day, if you've subscribed to Mad Friars, which you should, if you're listening to this podcast, yeah, you better be subscribing to Mad Friars. It's pretty much must read entertainment every single day. So first little tidbit I've got here is about Nathan Martorella. He says the Padres have been very impressed by his dramatic body transformation in the offseason. While he weighs about the same as last year, he is significantly more lean muscle, helping him move better on the field. After getting a bit of exposure in left field last year, he's attempting to build on that versatility this season and may see more time in both outfield corners. Now, I don't know anything about his arm. I know you need to have the arm play up to be able to move over to right field. But maybe that's something he's trying to prove, because a first baseman doesn't have to throw a whole lot other than flipping the ground balls in warmups. Maybe they have to throw home every once in a while on a close play, but you don't expect somebody at first base to have the cannon arm, and left field is usually the outfield spot where you put the guy with the weakest arm if you can.
Yeah. It'll be just good to see how his new body reacts to playing out in the outfield. That frame is there, so I'm sure he throws it relatively good. That'll be a question that we could probably even ask John next week, going into the future. Like, yeah, he maybe play outfield, but how's the arm? How's the accuracy? Can he get guys out?
And we're not saying that he's going to be the starting right fielder of the 2026 Padres, but
right. You
have to be able to have that ability to go out and play the outfield if they need to. That's huge.
Yeah.
And I want to jump back real quick. So we're talking about Jackson Merrill making the adjustment to center field. I noticed, so Jurickson Profar, his first year in the outfield, he was okay, but not good as far as throwing. And then he came back that next year, and all of a sudden he's gunning guys down right and left. And then Tatis moves over to right field last year and, I mean, wins the Platinum Glove. Yeah, what more can we say about that? But it's because of the arm. Both of those guys learned how to change from an infielder's throwing mechanic to an outfielder's throwing mechanic, where you get the crow hop, you get your full body behind it, a little more extension to the arm, a little more over the top. And the couple of times that I've seen Merrill throw a ball in, he's throwing it in like he's a shortstop. It's the shorter, quicker, get rid of it fast kind of a motion. I'm wondering if he's putting in some work to try to figure out how to get that arm to stretch out a little bit because he's got to be able to keep guys honest when he's digging one out from right center. He's got to be able to spin around and gun it in.
Yeah. Good point. And I think we've talked to someone in the past that has transitioned to the outfield that talked about the difference in, or maybe I heard it somewhere where they talk about the difference between throwing on the infield and throwing in the outfield, where you need to get a little more locked. There might even been Tatis that talked about, you know, throwing differently, it's different mechanics where you want to get a little more air, but a little more straight in the, you know, in the outfield, and in the infield, you just want to throw BBs.
In the infield, you see a lot more sidearm.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting up in the upper deck on the first base side. I don't know why. That was why we'd always wind up sitting at Jack Murphy when Caminiti was on the team. And I remember watching him during warmups and being just stunned by how far his ball moved horizontally. Like, it looked like his ball would break 2 or 3 feet from third base over to first. Where in the outfield, you want that motion over the top. So you get that, like, a four seam 12 o'clock spin. Yeah. That way your throw stays online even after it hops.
You know, they also teach you to not throw the ball on the seams. So if you do catch the ball with the seams in the outfield, because anything you throw from the outfield with the seam, you'll get movement.
Right.
All right, so let's move on to some more of these notes. And as he's been since coming down from the first big league camp, Ethan Salas was behind the plate with the double-A group. It still looks like he'll start the year at San Antonio, although his offensive numbers were spotty in short stints at Fort Wayne and San Antonio last year. The organization doesn't seem concerned that the offense will come. So far this spring, the point of emphasis has been on his throwing and continuing work with pitchers on developing and executing game plans.
Well, a catcher has so much to work on, but the hitting, he has a natural propensity to hit. And yeah. I think that's just a matter of time, a matter of reps.
He looks so good today. I really wanted to focus on him during the spring breakout game today. And I'm not an evaluator, but it was so smooth. Just everything that came over the plate, it was just, he was unfazed. And it's hard to believe that kid's still 17 years old and just looked so fluid behind the dish.
And Leo DeVries that I'm going to talk about here in a minute, he looked really good in that game too. He looked just fluid playing shortstop, and he's got a strong arm that was right on the money every time.
Yeah.
All right, so staying with the catchers, Brandon Valenzuela looks fully recovered from the knee injury that cut short his season last year. The organization believes that a leaner Valenzuela has better lateral movement behind the plate, so it will be encouraging to see him come into camp in great shape. And then Leo DeVries continued to impress with the low A club. He's hit several balls hard the past few days, but also showed an advanced eye at the plate, laying off pitcher's strikes early in the count. Early in the game, he drew a walk and got a tremendous jump in stealing second. Defensively, he moves well and has a plus arm. With the Arizona Complex League start moved up a month this year, he will probably begin the season there. But if he continues to play as he has in the spring, he should be up in Lake Elsinore for much of the summer. You know, I hadn't heard that the Arizona Summer League is starting earlier. I guess I hadn't paid attention to seeking out that news.
Yeah, it's weird. This whole year in spring training for the Padres has been weird because, you know, so many teams were still in spring training. In fact, the Mariners leave tomorrow. You know, they've had all this week to play games. I wonder if they're going to allow us to talk to them. Like we've got someone that can do the interpreting. I wonder if they can allow us to give us a chance to talk to him.
Well, we'll find out when he's up in Lake Elsinore this year.
Absolutely. There's several guys I want to talk to. Romeo Santabria, I believe, who will be there as well. I want to talk to him as well. But certainly wanted to get a little bit of some trigger time with Leo and just talk ball. Like I just want to hear the kid talk about baseball, and it's going to be real fun. Another kid that I hope to see in Lake Elsinore this year is J.D. Gonzalez. He was the Padres' third-round draft pick last year at a high school in Humaco, Puerto Rico. The left-handed hitting catcher has a smooth, easy swing. His knee, which kept him out of action last year, is not showing any remaining issues. Today, as a designated hitter, the 18-year-old showed solid command of the strike zone. Long-term, the organization sees him as a weapon behind the dish. Gonzalez will probably move a little bit slower than DeVries, but will be one of the key members of the 2023 draft class to watch this year.
Yeah, all I know about him so far is that he's got an absolute cannon arm, and they talk about his bat like he's got some power potential.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dylan Head has put on some very good weight and now looks like a star halfback at 6'1" and 192 pounds. I didn't realize he was that big, either in height or in mass. The center fielder from Illinois has been working on getting the ball in the air more and plans to run much more this year than his brief debut in the Arizona Complex and Cal Leagues last summer. In early batting practice, he put on a show, easily driving the ball to all fields and consistently finding the barrel. After popping up the pitch, the first pitch he saw in the game, Head came back with a line drive single to his right in his second plate appearance. While Head is a tremendous athlete, evaluators might be more impressed with his baseball acumen. He doesn't swing at many bad pitches, and last year posted a .363 on-base percentage in 124 plate appearances. Now, everybody wants to hit. You want to go up there and rake. You want to hit the ball hard and do damage. But when you've got top-of-the-scale speed like he does, learning how to be patient and drawing a walk and kind of seeking that, he gets on first base. Next thing you know, he's on third base.
Yeah.
You know, a walk, giving up a walk to him is like giving up a double or a triple.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm another kid that, God, I've only seen the pictures. He's like young Tirso Morales just came in ripped. I think he's going to have a really good year this year in Elsinore.
As far as the frame goes, I got to say Homer Bush Jr. fits that mold a little bit more. And yep. I don't remember what he looked like last year, but you see him now, and like you see him from across the field, you're like, holy cow, that dude is an absolute unit. Where so and so Dylan man. Head, he's taller, I think, or HBJ, he's got 2 or 3 inches on head. And he's got just the shoulders like this. He just cuts a figure. Well, I didn't realize Dylan Head was 6'1". I feel like he's my height. I'm 5'11".
Yeah. Well, when you're that young, you're not, you know, you don't have a lot of weight on you. You look small. If you're smaller in weight, you know, and you're still tall, 6'1" isn't that much different than 6 foot. Like I'm 6 foot, but I look much taller because I'm heavier than hell.
You know, so I just pulled Dylan Head up on Baseball Reference. He was listed at 6'185". And he must have carried that 185 pounds, yeah, like a ninja, because he, yeah, didn't look that big last year.
Yeah, that's we'll see how it goes with him. I'm really excited to see him. I think he's gonna have a little chip on his shoulder to come into this season. I don't know why I say that, but I feel like kid's gonna be motivated and really hit the ground running this year.
Good, good. Let's see it.
All right. So moving on, hey, this is something that I wanted to talk about a long time ago, but there's a little bit of rumblings happening right now with the Major League Baseball Players Association. So this is players want change to the MLBPA number 2, Bruce Meyer. This is by Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal. And this is the developing story. This is by no means the end, but there's certainly some rumblings going on in the union, which now encompasses the minor league guys. So this is what they wrote. There's a growing mutiny inside Major League Baseball Players Association. Major and minor league players leadership confronted executive director Tony Clark on Monday, this is last week, urging him to replace his second-in-command deputy director, Bruce Meyer, with the former MLBPA lawyer, Harry Marino, who we've had on the podcast when he was with Advocates for Minor Leaguers. People briefed on the call who were not authorized to speak publicly said, an informal vote was held on the call, but no formal action was taken. The long and sometimes heated call included some of the 72 representatives from across both majors and minors. The call did not end with a clear resolution, however. Many players and agents have long grumbled about union leadership, suspecting that agent Scott Boras has outsized his influence, which Boras and union leadership have always denied. But player agents have maintained those complaints for years, particularly in regard to the fortunes of baseball's middle class. Now, you know, you always hear these stories about the big league guys, you know, the high dollar number guys. Well, I'm doing it for the guys that are coming up. Well, there's only so many of those guys, and you know this, that are going to make 30, 35, 20, 20 million a year. Where are the guys that are making major league minimum to 2 to 3 to 5? You know, those kind of middle of the road guys that, you know, they're different. They're not Scott Boras clients. They're not these loud, you know, well-known clients, our agents. So Marino was approached by major league players and agents who are frustrated with the direction of the MLBPA. Some players want more money directed towards the union's bargaining team. So, like I said, it's a developing story. There's been a few more articles that since I put this on here that have come out where at varying degrees of support for Marino, support for, Meyer and Tony Clark. But I would suspect something's going to happen this year. Something's got to give.
Right. And it's interesting the Scott Boras angle. And so, because as you were kind of reading that, I was thinking, so Boras and the other mega agents, they've got control over what happens, what kind of contracts those key players, those big names sign, yeah, but they don't have nearly as much bargaining power when it comes to the guys at the lower end. Like you were saying, the guys making $1-5 million. So who is it that rises that sea that lifts all ships? That's in the bargaining agreement, in the collective bargaining agreement, where they define what's going to be the major league minimum salary. What are the arbitration, you know, how is arbitration determined? What raises those rates? And so I think it was interesting elsewhere in the article, they bring up what happened with JD Davis.
Yeah.
That up until this year, arbitration salaries have been guaranteed. And now this year they're no longer guaranteed. And so the Giants agreed to terms. Well, they went to arbitration. They couldn't agree to terms before arbitration. So they go into arbitration. The arbiter agrees with J.D. Davis's side. They say, okay, you're going to get paid however much. I think it was in the neighborhood of $6 million.
Yeah.
And then over the course of the next month and a half, the Giants go out and they bring in Matt Chapman to some big contract. And now there's your third baseman, J.D. Davis, who is a third baseman, now has no position. And he was kind of left on the outside communications-wise with Farhan Zaidi. And then come to find out that he was placed on release waivers and they let him go. And a part of that was they let him go like 2 days before the deadline. So that all he was due was his back pay for right. spring training. So they wound up cutting a check to him for like $1.1 million for the first, you know, the month of spring training, and happy trails to you. And he got kind of screwed out of the rest of that contract.
You know, it's funny, and going back to, you know, the hiring of Bo Mel, where like the writing on the wall here in San Diego was kind of pretty much going to be that, like he was going to be let go. And then the Giants kind of swooped in, but the timing of that did kind of feel a little collusion there with Bo Mel and the Giants. Now this happens and it becomes a pattern. Maybe I don't want to be, you know, put on my tinfoil hat here, but it just, you know, it's just another example of like, just, that's not how you play. You know, maybe from this point of view, that's not how you play ball. Maybe right. another point of view is like, hell, we're getting a good manager. Hell yeah, we got a good player. We're not going to pay this guy. Why would we do that? It just seems a little bit on the loophole, you know, kind of the loophole in the writing.
Well, and there's also Brandon Crawford, who was not retained by the Giants. He was a free agent, and it's like, okay, are they going to bring me back or not? And it sounds like his phone never even rang from the Giants, yeah. and nobody ever reached out to him like, okay, this is how interested we are. You would think after being in the organization for his entire career, what, since 2011, age 24 was when he yeah. made his debut, and he's been their starting shortstop every single year since. And then they just kind of let him fade away. And so now he's with the Cardinals. We'll see how that goes there. But you would think that an organization would have a little bit better communication with somebody that has been such a mainstay in your organization that whole time.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're not here to dump on the Giants, although it is kind of fun to do from time to time. Speaking of which, they signed Blake Snell, that interesting yeah. contract. And so now the Padres are going to have to go see him, what, 6-8 times this year. So I wish Blake Snell health and happiness. I love the guy to death. He's been probably the most entertaining Padres player of the recent, yeah. you know, with the media. I just hope that on the days that he has to start against the San Diego Padres, he has a little upset stomach or, yeah. You know, his fingers feel a little bit greasy and he doesn't right. have the command, you know, for whatever reason. So I wish him health and happiness every day, except when he's facing the Padres.
Yeah, we do. And the weird thing about that is he signed so late that he's not even close. He's not even close to starting. He's not going to get a start for at least a month. Like he has to build up to opening day time, and it's going to be a while. And we know what that looks like with Blake Snell. So I hope they kind of put that in with the formula of like, yeah, we got Blake Snell. We, you know, the beginning of last season wasn't great for Snell. It quickly turned around. But when he came over here from the trade, it took him a while to get his feet underneath him. And I think moving to another organization, being that far behind and ramping up for the season, is just going to be counterproductive for him. Unfortunately, hopefully he stays healthy. Hopefully he has a great season with those guys, but not that great of a season. But, you know, they had to have thought about that when they signed him. And if he does great, he can opt out. You know, and that's why kind of the thing about him, and I'll end it with this, is there was that unknown factor about Snell that you don't know if are you going to get the Cy Young? Are you going to get the million walk guy? Are you going to get that guy? Or who are you going to get? I think that's what was really holding up his market. And to kind of bring that back to where with the union, that was another one of the big problems with this offseason. Like some of those big names didn't sign because they had Boris attached to them, and other organizations can't set a budget, can't sign those guys underneath because they don't know if they're going to be able to sign that guy or if he's going to go there, what it's going to cost. Like when they talk about those top tier guys really, you know, kind of like holding up the market, they really do hold up the market. So they go, okay, so that's where we are. All right, so now we can go do this. We have plan A, B, and C. And those plan A, B, and C guys are the guys that win championships. sure, your high dollar guys are big money makers, really good ball players, highly productive, but it's those guys in between, the middle class of Major League Baseball, your journeymen, that really help you win championships.
Right. And so who has the control to be able to affect how the agents do go about their job and how, you know, it comes down to the collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
And so I guess that's where a lot of players have an issue with how Bruce Meyer's done his job in recent years. And maybe they've got a little bit more faith in Harry Moreno, even though he's a newcomer to that arena. You know, he did a great job with the minor leaguers, and it sounds like he's already earned the trust of a lot of people in the leadership of the Players Association.
Yeah. But let's move on and wrap it up with our friend Jonathan Mayo. I really appreciate this because when he wrote this article and he posted it on Twitter, he tagged Friars on the Farm. And that's the first time that I've ever seen that. Like I saw my notifications and then I'm like, Paul, I clicked on it and like Jonathan Mayo had tagged Friars on the Farm and one of the things. I don't know how you do it, but he tagged us. So I get all these notifications of likes. I'm like, we didn't post anything. Oh, really? So, Jonathan, if you ever listen, thank you so much. We'd love to have you come back on the podcast and give us grief because we love your personality. But most of all, we love your writing. And this is what he's written about the Padres.
Big tip of the cap to Jonathan Mayo. Yeah. So Padres international scouting dominance on full display with prospects in spring camp. So he writes, it can be tough sometimes to follow the pendulum that is the Padres farm system. 1 minute giving up a ton of prospects to acquire someone like Juan Soto, then bringing in a bunch of young players for someone like Juan Soto, only to send some of those players away in the recent Dylan Cease trade. But one thing is constant. The organization seems to know what it's doing and going aggressively after talent in Latin America. In 2023, the Padres signed the top amateur player in the international market using nearly all of their $5.8 million pool to sign Ethan Salas. Could 2024 be a repeat? The Padres have already gotten the first part done, once again signing the top player in this year's international class, Leodalis DeVries, for $4.2 million, once again using the bulk of their pool. And while it's unfair to expect a Salas-like climb, it does appear that the switch-hitting shortstop will move faster than many international signees being brought to the complex this month for minor league camp. So point there being that most of the Dominican, most of the international signees, they spend at least the first spring overseas. Oh, yeah. They stay in the Dominican camp before coming. Yeah. Quote, from personal experience being down there, it's really hard to sign good players, said Padres assistant director of player development and friend of the podcast, Mike Daly, who has international scouting experience and will also manage High A Fort Wayne in 2024. Huge credit to VP of Amateur and International Scouting Chris Kemp, International Scouting Assistant Alvin Duran, and International Scouting Supervisors Trevor Shum and Billy McLaughlin. Those guys are really plugged in down there. They're constantly improving their process and then putting the Padres in a really good position to be able to sign those quality players year in and year out. One of the biggest things the group seems astute at evaluating is how a player carries himself on and off the field. Salas and DeVries came with obvious physical gifts, but having an idea that they could handle being moved aggressively is checking off a very large box, one that allows the Padres to move future superstars towards San Diego at a more rapid pace. Quote, what really seems to separate guys is the makeup and how they're wired or driven, Daly said. DeVries was at our complex in the Dominican Republic since he signed, and we brought him over with the start of minor league camp, gave him the opportunity to experience here in Arizona in March, and then we'll take it from there.
You know, it's funny because we were talking about, just to kind of mention this right off the top, when we talked to Ben Badler, some of the articles that came around that time about guys that were promised money, and when they got it, they stopped wanting to practice. Like, they changed. Once they got the contract, even got the promise of the contract, their workout changed. Like, the makeup, you know, part of the due diligence that Ben talked about is going to talk to the family, going to watch the kid play, and making sure that they're emotionally able to handle the rigors of professional baseball and that they're committed. Like, those guys, you know, there's a lot of money. Even $50,000, $100,000, a couple $100,000 to these kids is a gold mine. When you give them that money, are they going to continue to want to play? Are they going to want to, you know, continue to grow in the game? And finding that out and counting on that is huge. And another one of the things I like about these last two international signing periods for the Padres is they're a large amount of money going on one guy. Like, find the really good player, sign that kid. You know what I mean? You don't spend a couple hundred grand here. Oh, sign this guy for $1.5 million here. And just kind of see which of them rides to the top. Like, find the best player, do your best to sign that kid, and spend most of your money doing that. Because all the other guys that come that are down in the Dominican Republic, you know, signing for $10,000, which is still a lot of money, but, you know, you never know.
You know, I wonder if some of this is kind of a learning experience, because the 2016 international signing pool that, you know, those guys all just became eligible for minor league free agency this last offseason. They gave a lot of money to a lot of guys that didn't wind up making it, or those that did, they didn't mind up being the impact guys that they thought they would be. So going back to when they're talking to these guys, when they're early teenagers, trying to figure out what drives these guys. Why are they here? Are they here because they have the opportunity to make a living that can change their families for generations? Right. And there's nothing wrong with that being the motivation. But it sounds like both Salas and DeVries, they want to be major leaguers. They want to play professional baseball. They want to play major league baseball. They want to be as good as they can be on the field. And then everything else is just going to fall in place.
Right.
So there's been a lot of dumping on Anthony Rendon lately.
Yeah.
For kind of the attitude that has come through in what he said in interviews. But from a certain standpoint, like, I have a hard time faulting somebody that finally got there and made that check. And I mean, like, I get it. You don't want to see somebody check out and like soft quit on the people that are paying their paycheck. But I kind of get that. Maybe baseball hasn't been what drives some of these guys. It's been, right, you know, trying to make that living, get to that level.
Right. And with Rendon, and I kind of got this, and he did get a little heat for that. I don't want my work to define who I am. And I think that's what he was kind of saying. Like, I'm really good at this. This is what I do. It's my job. It's not who I am. My family, my faith are more important, which is perfectly fine. Like, I work to support, you know, my lifestyle and my wife, if I had kids, to support my cat, really. But everyone, you know, since he's been injured and he hasn't really produced up to expectations of that gigantic contract, you're like, oh, you're checking out. You're not, you know, you don't care. I don't think that's what he was saying. He was saying, it's like, it's not who I am. I'm not Anthony Rendon, the Major League Baseball player. I'm Anthony Rendon, the father. I'm Anthony Rendon, the husband. You know, but like I said, since he doesn't really, if he was killing it, if he was just earning every penny of that contract, you go like, wow, yeah, hell yeah, man, you're not who you are. We love you, but that's cool. But since it's not, you know, he hasn't really played that well, people see it as quiet quitting or whatever, you know, like he's disinterested. Like, he still works hard. I guarantee the guy still works hard.
I think I'm a little bit, I may still be a little bit raw from a certain guy that came and signed a 9-figure contract, right, and didn't play very well in a Padres uniform and left without saying thank you to anybody. I'm a little bit raw from that. So I kind of, yeah, I had a lot of emotions come back to me from the Anthony Rendon thing. But to bring it back to this, you want to bring people into the organization that want to be successful, good baseball players, yeah, have a long baseball career, and then whatever fortune and fame comes with it, you know, that's just the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
And it seems like these guys, DeVries and Salas in particular, are wired that way.
Yeah. Well, and you saw the tweet earlier this week from, I think, Hector Gomez, some kid was, you know, already promised to go, was it with the Braves in the 2027 signing period? I think he's 13 years old.
And they think he's going to get a $5.8 million signing bonus. Yeah. Where does that number come from?
It's almost flaunting the fact that this happens. And we've talked about this since we've had the podcast. We talked to you about it in depth. You guys, if you're still here, go back and listen to our Ben Balder interview, because we talk about it. And he's just like, all right, it's disgusting. It's disgusting what not only these academies do. Well, the academies are trying to make money. They are trying to make players that are going to be signed. That is their job model. That is their business model. That's what they want to do. But on the other hand of that, you have the hungry major league teams that want the best kid that will be the best. And the sooner you find them, The better we can get him on our side and sign with our team. We talked about this with, God, he was the associate scout back in North Carolina. He's like, how did the Padres find me? They saw me posting videos of my travel ball team. My travel ball team kids are in junior high. They're 12, 13 years old. And they're like, hey, we like what you're doing. Will you go look at this kid? Or will you go look at that kid? So to think that they're not doing that here in America, but they're actually practicing it in a foreign country against the rules, is where it gets really shady. Like promising a 13-year-old kid, hey, you got $5.6 million if you keep working. That just doesn't seem right. Cause it, and if it doesn't work out, they can pull it back. And it happens all the time.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem right. And this is something that we're going to continue to talk about until something changes.
To
me, it feels like indentured servitude. And you see how many kids are chewed up and spit out. Because for every one that signs that 6 or 7 figure deal, there's dozens that think that they're going to be that guy. And the families attach all their hopes and dreams to that kid making it. You know, so as much as you see people here in the U.S., as families doing that for their kids, yeah, you've got families in the Dominican or in Venezuela or wherever else that come from much more humble upbringings and pinning all their hopes on some 12-year-old kid that maybe they'll be able to make it as a professional baseball player. It's a weird world. It's a weird situation more you think about it. And we've thought about it way too much.
You know, if you guys go and check out Bradford William Davis, he's the one that wrote the article with our friend of the podcast, Dr. Meredith Wills, about the baseball. He wrote this million dollar slaves. The gambling scandals are only the beginning. Like, gambling is so enmeshed into the game now that people feel the right that they can go to a soccer game and, you know, yell at the players. Or we do it as fans. You yell at this guy, you're screwing up by this. There's only, you know, and then when they don't perform, you should see their DMs. You should see what's being written about them on social media. And it's only, you don't have to look too far to see that fanaticism turn into violence. It's particularly when you have gambling now just starting to thread its way into all major league sports. I can't wait to read this article. It's called "The Gambling Scandals Are Only the Beginning. The relationships between players and fans have deteriorated rapidly with the expulsion of gambling."
Oh man. Yeah. You know, so for so many years, let's go ahead and go there. We're at the end of the podcast.
Right.
You know, I don't know who's stuck around for this long. The whole Shohei Ohtani thing has blown up and I don't know what to make of that. But for years, there's no gambling allowed around baseball. There's no, you don't even want to mention it. And then slowly DraftKings and, you know, those day
Caesar's bets. Yeah.
All that stuff has started to become a little closer and closer to baseball. Now, I think the Cincinnati Red Stadium, you can actually like walk across the street and place bets. They've got a casino like right there. And you've got Oakland where the A's are trying to move into Las Vegas. And for years, it's like, no, we cannot have pro sports in Las Vegas because it's too close to gambling. Well, the Raiders moved there and it's been a huge success. And now everybody's got their eyes on Vegas.
Yeah. And that's just, it's insane how it's funny. I saw this tweet the other day and it was right after the scandal broke where ESPN goes, okay, we're going to talk about the lead into it was brought to you by DraftKings. We're going to talk to so-and-so brought to you by Caesar's Bet. Like every segment was sponsored by some kind of betting format.
Right. So is Shohei Ohtani going to decide to retire from baseball to go pursue a minor league career in basketball?
Let's bet on that. You know, I don't know.
I remember Michael Jordan wearing a Birmingham Barons uniform.
But it's just you wonder why this has happened. You know, that's not the cause of it. I mean, $4.5 million is a lot to not know that's coming out of your bank account. Let's just go to it. Did I think he paid off his gambling debts to an illegal bookie? Absolutely. I think he did. And I think
you don't think any of that was his own gambling?
I don't think so. I really
that's
don't
a
think
hell
so.
Of a lot of money to go to bail somebody out.
But even so, even if that is true, which you know, in my opinion is true, and we'll find out once everything kind of goes through. just being gambling adjacent to an illegal bookie, if that was to like DraftKings or some, you know, Caesar's Palace, like there was an article about Bruno Mars owing MGM Grant like millions of dollars because he just gambles all his money away while he's a resident, you know, playing as a resident there. It just looks bad. It's really bad, but he's the unicorn. So I guarantee you they're going to do their investigation. And if the feds don't find anything really bad, they're going to hush everything under the rug and they're going to keep that cash cow Shohei Ohtani, the victim. They'll make him out to the victim and they will keep that money coming in, which he brings in.
Yep. If he was Joey Schmidlap, you know.
Oh, God, yeah.
He'd be suspended and he'd be out of baseball and you wouldn't even really hear about it. It's just, oh, he had a gambling problem. He's gone.
Yeah.
But no, he is the chosen one.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
No. And yeah, we'll see how that goes and we'll see how everything breaks out, but let's get out of here. Thank you guys for staying. You can find me on Twitter at SD Donovan.
You can find me at Zippy_TMS. By the way, go hit up MerrillMadness.com. Get your own Merrill Madness shirt. Support what they're doing. They're a good family doing good things for baseball families.
Absolutely.